Morning, Chattanooga area. Tony Sanders Outdoors is live on the air from the banks of the beautiful Tennessee River right here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Good morning to all the areas that are hearing us. And every time I drive around, I find out the signal goes a little further than I thought. So, Rob, do not insult the people of Cleveland anymore. They can hear us.
I have never insulted the good people of Cleveland.
Or Ray County. They can hear us.
I have never insulted the good people of Ray County.
Well, you insult everybody. You insult me all the time.
Well, I know. You're special, though.
Oh, okay.
You get the special insult treatments.
How are you doing this morning, Rob?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself, Tony?
I am having a ball. That's all I can say. It's wonderful. Life is great. You know?
Well, I just wish the water would come down a little bit quicker so I could get back out there. But, you know, it'll get it down sooner or later, and I'll be back to fishing here shortly.
Well, I tell you what, you know, you can fish now. You just got to kind of surf.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm a little worried about is, you know, putting in my kayak over at the dam and, you know, being in South Pittsburgh in about 15 minutes. So, yeah, I'm not looking forward to that one.
In the studio, we also have from SCI, Billy Swan. How are you doing this morning, Billy?
I'm good, man. How are you this morning?
It's wonderful. It's a great Saturday morning. It's chilly. It's going to be chilly all day. Temperature's not going to change much. Doesn't take long to wake up when you step outside and it's 35 degrees.
Kinda, it was 28 on signal this morning.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's kind of reminds me of hunting season.
Yeah, we didn't have a whole lot of that 28-degree weather in December. I mean, we did a few, but it seemed like when we did have the 28-degree weather, it was the days where it was 70 when you got in the tree stand. It was 28 when you got down.
Yeah, yeah.
Just one extreme to the other.
It is. It definitely is a little on the strange side, and I hate it. This is really good weather for hunting, and there's nothing to hunt.
Yeah, it's still.
You could probably squeeze
in a few squirrel. We're going to do some pheasant this afternoon with Richard Sims.
Where are you headed?
Dunaway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're going to do, he's got a dog he wants to work a little bit,
yeah.
So I'm going to meet him about 2 hours after I leave here.
Well, you should tell Richard to come on in.
Yeah, he's not fishing. No, he wanted it to be like South Dakota. I said, it's going to be like South Dakota.
So you're not doing the European day? I mean, I don't know if he's wanting to work.
No, it'll, we'll put out a certain amount of birds for him, and then he just wants to work his dog.
Yeah. So. Yeah, he's got a new dog he got down at Blowing Springs, and I've been following the dog's progression on Facebook. So, I guess I'm actually following Richard's progression on Facebook too. So,
don't lie, you've been following the dog. That's what. Yeah. The dog will probably have its own Facebook page after this is over.
Yeah, you think you ought to know its name, shouldn't you? It's
all right, I'm on it. Hang on, give me a minute.
Yeah. Yeah, we're sitting here, we're referring to it as a dog. I mean, come on, this is a primo hunting machine. And, you know, we should know its name.
Well, if you'll give me a few minutes, we will know its name.
No, I know, that's why I'm kind of putting pressure on you.
Yeah, no pressure whatsoever.
Hey, you guys got just a small event coming up, right?
Yeah, actually, it's our regular event that's turned into a big event. March 9th. At the Trade Center, we've got Craig Boddington coming in. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him or not. Outdoor writer for many years, hosts a lot of different outdoor shows on the Outdoor Channel. He just recently, I guess, signed a contract with SCI National to be their spokesperson.
Oh, okay.
So he travels around the country doing these events, and we were lucky enough to get him to agree to come to ours, and so he's going to be there. Actually, at I think it's 3:30 or 3 o'clock on that Saturday, he's doing a private seminar.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk a little bit about hunting, I guess, and some in Africa and some in North America. And that's what I went back out to the car to get. I've got a ticket to go see him if you want to.
Oh, okay.
If somebody wants to try to do something with that. And then at 5 o'clock, we'll start our social hour, meet and greet, whatever you want to call it. And we'll be, of course, selling some raffle tickets and chances on some trips and prizes. We've got, gosh, probably the best lineup of firearms we've ever had, believe it or not, in a time when you can barely get one. yeah, and that's what I was flipping through here also with some auction items. I just realized my printer only printed out about half of them, but I can...
It's early.
Yeah. Well, I did it last night. Oh. I just went over and grabbed them when I left. I don't know if some of them, you know, they do that fly off in the floor thing when you get a bunch of it going, but yeah, just for instance, 5-day Argentina dove hunt for 6 people. You know, that's a great hunt. I don't know if anybody, I've not done it, but I know lots of people that have. And I think you shoot, you know, something crazy, 400 or 500 dove a day or something.
Yeah.
It's just nuts. I mean, people come back and they can't move their arm, you know, from so many shotgun blasts. Here's one that, of course, we're just talking about pheasant hunting. South Dakota 3-day pheasant hunt for 2. That's a real good hunt. I've talked to those people personally. They they have a just a, you know, real good outfit. Includes all your birds in the preparation. I mean, the list goes on. New Zealand, Canada.
Sure.
A 6-day trip to Alaska fishing, fully guided.
How many people are you guys expecting at the banquet?
Well, we've been pushing our VIP table, which is a table of 8, reserved seating, preferred seating. And I think at this point we've sold probably close to 10 or 12 of those tables.
Right.
I don't know how many. There's 8 to the table, so there's nearly 100 right there. And who knows how many more individual tickets, 3 or 4 here, 4 or 5 there.
Sure.
Of course, we'll have all the – I was at the TWRA booth yesterday in Nashville. We'll have, I'm going to guess, probably a dozen, 2 dozen officers there, plus the Georgia guys.
Right.
Mike Butler from the Wildlife Federation, he's going to be there. Ed Carter. I want to say I got to give an official count to the Trade Center, but I'm going to say somewhere between 300 and 350 people.
Well, good. I always enjoy coming to the SCI banquet. Not only do you have a lot of great items, it's a good group of guys. I know. Your buddy, and I don't know how involved he's been this year, but Chris Wilmore always gives me grief because, and I do. SCI is the one, I guess, because they're not specifically associated with any one item. I don't, you know, when I start going through the, you know, the DU, the turkey guys, and I just never click at SCI, but after a couple of hunting trips with Chris, that's no longer the case. SCI starts the list because they're for everybody. You know, your shirt there, first for hunters. I mean, and that's exactly right. That's what SCI. It's a lot different than the other organizations. Not in a bad way. I mean, just in it's just different, and it's about hunting, period. And I think that's something that. Not really knowing that much about SCI to start with, I've really gotten to respect what you guys do in the area and nationally as well. So
yeah, we're the second largest gun lobby, just right behind the NRA, and the only organization other than the NRA that has full time lobbyists in Washington. I mean, that's period. I mean, there's the NRA and there's us. That have people standing there literally waiting for any type of talk or legislation that would do anything to hinder hunting or anti-hunters.
I mean, sure.
We're right there just waiting for it to, you know, on call.
All right. Now, if they want to get tickets, What's the best way to do it?
The phone number on the invitation. I mean, I can give me a
sure.
call it out.
Sure.
Area code 423-240-0719. And that's actually me.
Oh, okay.
I handle that, and I can take a credit card number over the phone. We prefer to secure the seats just
sure.
due to the fact that they're limited. And plus, you know, if you say you're going to come, I'm going to count on you being there. That means I got to pay for a meal.
Right.
That'll be served. So.
And this is a fundraiser.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we here's another thing that separates SCI from, and here again, I don't mean this in a bad way towards any other organization.
But we need them all.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. But at our local events like this, we keep 70% of our proceeds, what we make, we keep right here.
Right.
And our local board of directors determines how we do that locally. And that's, just like last October out at Enterprise South. I mean, we hosted that for TWRA, that Hunts for Warriors.
Yeah.
Fully catered. You know, orange hats and vests for all the guys, you know, breakfast, lunch. Yeah. It was just a great event. I mean, it's just nice to see to be able to do these type of promotions. And plus for TWRA, I can't even count the number of, I saw them at Nashville yesterday, the mechanical deer and turkeys we bought for those guys. I mean, it's, my favorite story ever was the first, when I first got involved with SCI back in 98. I think Region 3 had one deer, maybe, that they shared amongst all the officers. And now I think there's, I don't know, seven or eight of them, maybe, six or seven. I don't know. They've all got one. It's almost to the point that, you know, there's so many of them out there now that, now they drive the road. Oh, yeah, that's the mechanical deer over there on the side of the road. Never mind it.
Well, it's there's no doubt that SCI is a great organization. And I said last week, knowing you guys were coming in here, I love this time of the year. You got the Wild Turkey Banquet is the Saturday before yours. Then you have your banquet. Mm-hmm. Then Rocky Mountain Elk follows up in May, I think. So I love this time because you can't hunt. So it's a chance to get out. And honestly, especially with SCI always leading it off, it's a chance to get out there and swap some hunting stories about this past season.
Oh, sure.
And so I'm looking forward to it. Now, when we come back from the break, I have actually got an interview that I did with Craig Boddington on one day this week. I don't remember what day it was. We're going to play part of it. It's about 16 minutes long, so we won't play all of it here at this bottom, but we'll play part of it, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about what SCI is. Feel free to give us a call. Of course, I would wait till about 5:35 before I called now because we'll be listening to the interview with Craig when I come back. Tony Sanders Outdoors. All right, we have on the phone with us Craig Boddington, who is known to many. And Craig, I'll be honest with you, as I've been doing some research, you're not only is your book list quite impressive, your hunting credentials speak for themselves. So what I want to do is talk a little bit about, let's talk about your books to start with. According to the Internet, and of course we know everything on the Internet is accurate, you have 19 books out, is that right?
Well, you know, I'm no better at keeping up with the Internet than anybody else. I think 23 is the right number right now. And thank you, Tony. It's good to be here with you. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're coming to Chattanooga on March 9th to
yes, sir.
To be with the Safari Club International, their annual fundraising banquet here in Chattanooga, which is always a good time. And they're bringing you in, and one of the things that's real interesting, and we'll talk about more of this after you're off the air, but they're going to do a special limited number attendance as far as people just sitting down getting a chance to talk with you about North American hunting or whatever I guess you want to talk about. So let's start with the North American stuff, and then I want to get into some of the African hunting you've done. The North American hunting, I'm assuming you hunt anything and everything that's illegal to hunt. Would that be a good way
No, I've I've missed a few spots here and there, but you know, I think like just like 10 million other North American hunters, I'm first and foremost a deer hunter. That's for most of us, that's big game, and of course the whitetail is the most populous and most popular game animal in the entire world. I'm from Kansas originally, and I actually grew up in a time when we had virtually no deer. We didn't have a modern deer season until I was a teenager. So when I was a kid, Dad and I would go west to Colorado and northwest to Wyoming to hunt deer and antelope. And I guess going different places is a habit I never got out of. But the last several years, I've had a little farm in southern Kansas, and that's kind of my not sure the deer are aware of this, but that's my whitetail laboratory. And so far, they're still teaching me hard lessons. But I love to hunt whitetail. I've hunted them in many parts of the country, including the southeast. And so for me, you know, everybody often asks me, what's your favorite game animal? Well, I really like it all. I'm crazy about bears. I love the mountain game and wish I could do more of it, but it's really not affordable on a regular basis. But I can hunt whitetail deer every single season, and I absolutely do.
Well, compared to the deer we have here in the southeastern part of the United States, your Kansas deer are much bigger than we're normally used to seeing.
Well, so. Obviously you haven't hunted on my place. No, I've got some good deer, but we have a post-rut season there. The archery season is during the rut. Our rifle season is post-rut. And, you know, I've been here 5 years now, and every year I've identified three or four really good bucks in the neighborhood. And to my knowledge, not a single one of that top tier has ever been taken.
Besides the deer, do you get into the pheasant or quail hunting? I actually just came to Kansas last January for the first time quail hunting, and just had a ball hunting wild quail, which we don't seem to be able to find many of here in the South.
Well, that's what I grew up with, and in the late 60s and really through the 70s, we had fantastic quail hunting in Kansas. Now, I'm a little bit too far east for pheasants, but we've got a number of coveys here on the place, but I honestly, I don't hunt them because the quail in this particular area are terribly depressed. I'm working real hard to bring them back, but today we really don't have the kind of quail hunting that I grew up with. Now, in other parts of the state, we certainly do. Further west and in the north, there is probably some of the best wild quail hunting in the world is still in Kansas and especially Oklahoma. So we've got good quail around. I really don't have them here. I'm too far east for pheasants, but the pheasant hunting in Kansas is truly a lot better than when I was a kid. They've done a great job. We've had a drought the last couple of years, and the birds are down a little bit depending on where you are. But they'll come back fairly quickly. We started getting some rain about a month ago, and so I'm hopeful that this is going to be a really good spring hatch, and the pheasants will be back. But honestly, today, the two most popular game creatures, I guess is the right word, not animals, are the white-tailed deer, and then in the spring, the turkeys. And we have lots of turkeys, which is another thing that we simply didn't have here when I was a kid.
Turkeys have definitely made a comeback, and I think that's one of the things that people don't realize who are not in the hunting community, what hunters actually bring back or give back to game. I mean, we do hunt them, but we give more back than we take.
Well, we really do. You know, the Pittman-Robertson funding that came in the 1930s has yielded about $17.2 billion for wildlife conservation. That is parceled out to the states, and what that is an excise tax on firearms, ammunition, and archery equipment, and that is funneled directly into wildlife management. And then in addition to that, by supporting private organizations like Safari Club International and so many others, Ducks Unlimited, Quail Unlimited, and the list goes on, that number is also in the billions of dollars, and that's contributed directly by sportsmen for habitat improvement and wildlife conservation. And we have really come from rags 100 years ago to riches today with probably more deer and more turkeys than there ever were.
Well, keeping along this line, not necessarily about the conservation, but about the big game hunting or the deer hunting, I read an article just recently because the accolades, obviously, for you from editor for many magazines that we all read, but I really enjoyed the article on the four big game cartridges for North America. And it was kind of interesting because you said, I believe in there, you personally, the 30-06 is your favorite, but you were kind of surprised at the 308. And I've always used 30-06s until this year, and I went to a 308 Winchester this year for the first time. So I was kind of I enjoyed reading that article.
Well, there's really no difference between the two. My dad was a 308 guy. I've always been a 30-06 guy. It is not possible to love all cartridges equally, so that's really still the way I sit. But the 308 is a wonderfully versatile cartridge. So is the 30-06. If you lived in a little bit more open country, then you might lean towards a 270, which is always and still a great choice. But, you know, it's campfire arguments like that that keep me in business. I probably do, 40% of my writing about guns and cartridges and 40% about pure hunting, and then the rest of it sort of cross over between the two.
Yeah. Well, that is our first part of the interview with Craig Bonnesty. Now, Craig's come into town, and this is kind of I didn't get into it in an interview. Let me tell you something. Craig, 23 books and over 3,000 articles. 3,000. Now, Rob, you and I are part of the Southeastern Outdoor Press Association. That's impressive.
That indeed is impressive. That is That is just absolutely prolific.
Well, and it's funny, and I don't remember if it's recorded, because he and I had a conversation before we started recording and after we finished recording, and I think it was actually after and I said something about it. He goes, I don't write well, I just write fast. So, but he is actually the editor of Guns and Ammo, I believe. Gosh, I can't remember what all he is. And it's kind of interesting, too. Now, he is a retired, I believe, lieutenant colonel from the Marines. Mm-hmm. And he's been with the same group since he started doing this back in the 70s,
wow.
Which is kind of rare, you know, even though he's, quote, independent, but he works with all the different groups. So had a wonderful conversation. I hope you enjoyed that. And we got more of it. I don't know exactly how much we played. But you can, if you want to hear Craig, get to know Craig, meet Craig, you can do it. There's only 40 tickets, is that correct?
That's correct.
There's
not even that many now. I mean, but originally there was 40 available slots.
So there's only going to be 40 people in this, quote, private meeting with Craig before the banquet.
That's correct.
And that'll be a great opportunity to sit there and chit-chat. Let me tell you, I had a great time when I wasn't recording, just talking with him. Very interesting fella. Great stories. Do a lot of research on Craig Boddington, Boddington, if you want to find out about it. And then I get into it, and when we come back, we'll play this. Talked a little bit. His daughter has taken the love of hunting and run with it more. And it's his family deal, obviously. Tony Sanders Outdoors. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tony Sanders Outdoors, 267-1023, 267-1023. Third part of the interview that I did with Craig. Craig's an interesting fella. And I was telling you guys, when I was doing a little bit of research, getting ready for the story, his daughter, Brittany, is also an accomplished hunter. She was involved in a nearly tragic hunt. And I don't think people realize, and we're going to get into it here in just a second with Craig, I don't think people realize how dangerous African hunting can be. I mean, there's something about hunting an animal that hunts you. And she was in a situation where she was, I think it was a leopard, that she, it was a bad situation. She was with a very experienced guide. The guide wisely backed them out of the situation because it was getting ready to get really bad. They had a, I don't know if the leopard was wounded or just being pushed, but it was not happy and went into heavy cover. Then, so the guide backed them out and to regroup and basically to let the leopard get out of the cover, move on, and then they would just pick up the trail and go after it again. And they waited a while. I actually read the police report of the incident, and they actually waited a while, went back in to pick up the trail, and the leopard had never moved. It had stayed right there, and as soon as they walked in, it came at them, and it was on top of one of the other guides, and there was, she shot and ended up hitting the guide, scaring the leopard, hitting the guide. The guide lived, but I mean, she said in her in the police report, it lasted like 4 or 5 seconds. Just amazing, you know, how quick it is, and that's some serious stuff when you're hunting something that's going to hunt you back.
Yeah, I think I know. We were just talking about the lion deal there earlier. I think I know four people, counting the story you just told me, that have been involved in something like that. Mostly it's leopard and lion.
Yeah.
It's always what it is. It's leopard and lion. Of course, everybody knows, I think it's the hippo kills more people.
Yeah.
Than, you know, but you never hear about the hippopotamus attack. Kind of hard to envision. I think most of the time they're not really attacking. They're just trying to get away. And
right.
You just happen to be, you know.
It's like, it's like a bulldozer on legs.
Yeah, exactly. You're just in the way, and there's no not recovering from a, you know, 3,000, whatever it is, pound animal. Yeah. You trample and you do that. But
Paul, let's go ahead and play the rest of the interview with Craig. Like, there's only about 4 or 5 minutes left of it, but we'll play the rest of it because we actually get into the, at this point, we get in talking about the safari hunting. So, Craig Boddington.
And that's actually what the whole purpose of my radio show when I started it 6 years ago. It was kind of an electronic campfire, so I do enjoy those discussions myself. Let's turn a little bit to the African. When you search your name, obviously your African books as well as African safari stories are very, very, very numerous. What are your thoughts just on how African hunting has changed through the years? I mean, you've obviously been doing it a long time.
There in 1977, and in those days, the hunting industry was still centered in East Africa, Kenya, and then Tanzania to the south. Kenya closed in 1977, and just a few weeks after I was there, and we really thought that was the end of the world, and what really happened is the safari industry just moved south, and today the primary safari industry is very much in southern Africa. There's the number is something like 20,000 hunting safaris are conducted annually in Africa, which is a very big number. But probably 75% are in both South Africa and Namibia. So in today's Africa, the safari has gotten shorter. When I started, the average was minimum 14 days, usually 21. But today, the 10-day Plains Game Safari is by far the most common, and it really is the greatest bang for your buck in the entire world. You can go on a great Plains Game Safari in either Namibia or South Africa for really pretty much the same amount that some of my neighbors here that are outfitters charge for a whitetail deer hunt.
Well, that's something I've always wanted to do. Now, I'll be honest with you, I've never had a great desire to hunt many of the, I guess, the most dangerous game that you see out there. And I don't have a problem with anybody that does. It's just not something that's been real high on my list. But I could see doing a plains safari and matter of fact, I've even looked at doing a photography safari because to me that's just as appealing as well. So,
well, it really is. I mean, it really doesn't matter whether you're there with a camera or there with rifle or for that matter, a bow. The wonderful thing about Africa that is so much different from any place in the world is the variety is just incredible, and you have no idea what a given day is going to bring. You don't know what you're going to see, but you're going to see some very interesting things, and you're going to see a lot of beautiful animals.
Now, I've confirmed, at least through photographs on the web, that that you have taken most of the big five or big four, the dangerous
well,
animals.
The big five is
the big five.
Yeah, buffalo, elephant, lion, leopard, and rhinoceros.
And so, have you taken all? Have you harvested all five?
I have. I was lucky. The rhino hunting is not what it was. It's very limited and very expensive. But I was very fortunate. I got a permit 25 years ago and was able to take one and only. I've hunted the other dangerous animals quite a bit more than that.
What is it like just hunting something that can be so dangerous? I mean, let's face it. I mean, any of the five can end your hunting or end your life very quickly.
Well, it adds a little extra spice. I think dangerous game is probably an exaggeration. Potentially dangerous is a more accurate term, because usually you don't get in trouble unless you make mistakes, and often you have to really compound the errors before you get into trouble, and the biggest mistake always is not shooting straight the first time, and of course I've done that, but even then the chances of getting into a truly dangerous situation are not remote but limited, but the potential is always there, and so that kind of makes your palms sweat and adds an extra level of excitement. Hunting buffalo, other than the fact that you can track them, but hunting buffalo is a lot like hunting whitetail, except you're hunting an animal that hears well, sees well, smells well, loves heavy cover, and then has the added ability to absolutely turn the tables on you if you make a mistake.
Yeah, definitely has a pretty nasty disposition at times.
No, they absolutely can. Robert Ruark said it better than anybody else when he wrote that a buffalo looks at you like you owe him money.
I was kind of surprised to see your daughter, I believe it was Brittany, is also a very accomplished hunter in her own right.
She really is. She had no interest until she was 17 and then suddenly asked if I would take her. And it's, kids are different, and they either have interest or they don't. There's nothing you can do about it, and it's not something you can push. So I had never pushed it. But when she was 17, a switch went on somewhere. She's 27 now, and she's really done a great deal of hunting. And I would say, especially in the last few years, she's done a lot more of it on her own than she ever did with me.
Well, many of the articles that I pulled up on her did not include you. So, I mean, it was obviously that she was, some of the early ones, she was obviously hunting with you, and then she's gone on her own. So
no, she,
I think
she
that's
definitely
wonderful.
She doesn't go hunting just when Dad takes her. She's extremely avid. She shoots wonderfully well and is truly very accomplished, very proud of her.
Well, what advice would you give anyone else, probably the same advice you gave her when she started hunting the big game? I mean, for somebody that's looking at doing a trip for the first time, what advice would you give them?
Read and study. There's a lot of great video work being done. I think everything you read and see you have to take with a grain of salt, and certainly anything relative to Africa becomes dated quickly because the things do change fast over there, but read and study all you can and spend a lot of time on the range. And, of course, unlike whitetail hunting in your back 40 or your backyard, an African hunt is going to be a guided hunt. And so do your research and talk to a lot of people and a lot of references. Find a good guy, and then once you've found him, trust him. The biggest problem that you have on any guided hunt is not listening to your guide, and that doesn't make sense because you've hired him, you're paying him for his expertise, and you probably ought to pay attention.
That makes a lot of sense, and I've become a big believer in guides. They know the area so much better, and if you're traveling, you know, whether it's a few hundred miles or several thousand miles, a guide can make a difference between a successful hunt.
Absolutely can. I mean, I'd be the first to say that the most satisfying hunt in the world is to do it yourself and do without a guide. But in many situations around the world, that's neither practical nor possible, and also not very smart. And this is not new. Theodore Roosevelt hired guides, and probably the greatest African hunter of all was Frederick Salou, killed in World War I in 1917. But when Fred Salou went hunting, he also hired guides.
Well, Craig, I'd sure appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. You are going to be in town on March 9th at the SCI Banquet, which we'll be telling the listeners a lot more about here in the next couple of weeks. And I look forward to meeting you, and I look forward to coming down there to the early afternoon session and hearing some of your stories about whatever you're going to be talking about.
Well, Tony, that sounds good. I'll look forward to seeing you there.
All right, Craig, thank you so much.